consumers could be cracking a cold one soon enough with an extra ingredient. Coca-Cola confirming Monday it's exploring the cannabis drinks market. The announcement coming after a report said the world's largest beverage maker was in talks with Canada's Aurora Cannabis to develop cannabis-induced drinks. While there are no guarantees a partnership would be a go, Aurora shares soared by 22% Monday.
North Korea's rolling out its latest propaganda fixation, getting back together with the South. Pyongyang's been pushing the idea to its people before the South's leader visits on Tuesday. Just days before the summit, Kim Jong-un spoke of tearing down a wall of conflict and opening a grand path for unification, according to state media. But what the North has in store may not be uniting as equals.
Elon Musk's space transportation company, SpaceX, says it has signed up the world's first private passenger to fly around the moon. The company making the announcement on Twitter, but withholding the identity of the traveler until Monday, along with when he or she will take the voyage. SpaceX said the mission will use the Big Falcon rocket, or BFR, which is still being developed.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's September the 18th, 5:11 in the morning. And here we are again, another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Thank you for being with us this morning. Lots to cover this morning. You heard there in the opening montage, SpaceX selecting a passenger for its rocket to go to the moon. Last night, we found out the name of the new astronaut, 42-year-old billionaire from Japan, Yusaku Mazawa. He is an art collector, an entrepreneur who's 42 years old, signed up to go on that first ride on the BFR, the Big Falcon rocket to the moon. Lots of hurdles to get through before a human, let alone a civilian, gets on a rocket and goes to the moon, but exciting nonetheless. We've got a great show for you this morning. Willis Tower has unveiled what's called Catalog, sort of a neighborhood of its own with dining, shopping, fitness, entertainment, other stuff. We're going to be talking with someone about that this morning. The portfolio director at EQ Office overseeing the Willis Tower project will be here, David Moore. We'll bring him in just momentarily here this morning. A little bit later in the program, Tim Roach will be here. He's the CEO of Lender. We'll talk about small business lending trends. That'll be at about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's hit the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk to find some numbers. Dow futures look like they'll be positive as we head to the opening bell this morning. Dow futures up 57 points. NASDAQ futures are up about a third. S&P futures are up about a quarter this morning, heading to 8:30 Chicago time. Around the world, in London, markets are up by a fraction. In Germany, up by more than a quarter. In France, up by more than a third. And in Asia this morning, markets up generally in positive territory as well, with the Nikkei in Japan up more than a percent, almost a percent and a half. And that's about 325 points. The Hang Seng is up about a half a percent. The Shanghai is up almost 2%. And oil is trading at about $69.89 a barrel, which is up about 98 cents. So lots of numbers there from the early morning markets that we'll keep you posted on through the morning. A couple of stories before we get going here this morning. China says it will take countermeasures to President Trump's decision to raise tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports, and an American business group is warning that a downward spiral will happen now if this trade battle moves forward. The Commerce Ministry has given no details of what China's response will be to the U.S. tariffs imposed yesterday by the president that take effect again on September 24th. The fight over Chinese technology is at the center of this. Beijing previously released a $60 billion list of goods for retaliation. Trump administration announced the tariffs on some 5,000 Chinese-made goods that will start at 10% beginning on Monday. The European Union's antitrust watchdog is investigating whether automakers BMW, Daimler, and Volkswagen colluded to limit development and rollout of car emission control systems. The EU Commission says this morning that it's received information that BMW, Daimler, Volkswagen, and VW units, Audi and Porsche, held meetings to discuss clean technologies aimed at limiting car emissions. Front and center this morning, we begin with Catalog, a new development, 300,000-square-foot development at Willis Tower that will house dining, shopping, entertainment. It's actually big enough to be considered its own neighborhood. We're happy to have with us David Moore this morning. He's the SVP Portfolio Director at EQ Office and overseeing this Willis Tower project. David, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
This is pretty cool. I've been looking at some of the renderings of this and going through this morning. Why this development? Why Catalog is the name?
Yeah, so I think I'll start with the latter. So the name Catalog is really a nod to Sears in the history of kind of mass mailing and the development of the catalog in Chicago and kind of really a period of time when Sears is really the leader and innovator. So it's a nod to that history. And, you know, what we're doing here, I think you hit it spot on when you introduced it. We're really creating a neighborhood. So, what we see right now as an office owner, so EQ Office owns buildings across the country, and it's really, it's all about talent and trying to help office tenants, find and retain and kind of inspire that talent. And so we're creating a neighborhood. I mean, we're basically taking the scale of Willis Tower, which has always been there, and the bones, which have been there since the early 70s, and really trying to reinvigorate it and breathe some new life into it and create this new urban destination that the Loop Worker really wants today.
Yeah, and that's part of it, too. It's not just for Willis Tower. It's for the entire neighborhood. This development's like something like this. Again, the size and scale of it is pretty substantial. Could really change the whole character of that area, couldn't it?
It could, and I think it will. If you look at it today, we're already well under construction, and you can see the steel going up around there, and there's already a lot of buzz and a lot of interest just given what you can see. But once it's done, I mean, we'll be done here with the first phase in the middle of 2019, and you really will see this brand new destination that people are going to flock to. And right now, at the south end of Wacker Drive. Very prestigious location, close to transit, close to a lot of the best things of the Loop. But if you think about where you go to get your lunch or where you go for after work to get drinks or food or whatever services you might need, there's not a lot of options. So we saw that as an opportunity, and we said, how do we address those needs and really help serve our customer? And that's what we're doing right now.
When do you expect to see people in this using it on a daily basis when it's complete? When is the date for that?
So the final completion will be early 2020. It's a phased project, so it's a multi-year phased project. In May of 2019, we'll have the brand new entry off Wacker Drive and all the new street frontage kind of along Wacker Drive will start to deliver. And then the bulk of Catalog is going to deliver later in 2019. So late third quarter, early fourth quarter of 2019 is when you'll really start to see it open and all the new retail destinations available for people to enjoy.
We're talking about the Willis Tower project called Catalog, new dining, shopping, fitness, entertainment center that's going in the Willis Tower. David, one of the centerpieces of this is going to be something called Urban Space. We've had a lot of conversations here on the broadcast about the popularity of food halls, and that's what this is going to be. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Urban Space is our most recent tenant that we've announced. They're about 14,000 square feet. And the way that they work is essentially they have a really large, nice space, and then they work with individual operators to bring in different types of food concepts. So they'll have anywhere from 15 to 20 different unique operators covering all different types of food. And, some will have a small little stand, some will have a little bit of a larger kiosk, some will have a bigger area, and the idea is to really just provide a lot of different unique food options for everybody that works in the building or people that come to the building. And they're a New York-based group. They've been around for over 30 years, even though the food hall trend is kind of something we're seeing a lot today. This is a group that's been around for a long time, and we're excited. This is their first location in Chicago.
David, give us a sense of what the rest of the space is going to look like. Is this going to look more like a mall? I know the rendering show a big open space with a glass ceiling gives it the idea that it's a lot larger than it probably is. But give us a sense of how this is going to be laid out.
Yeah, so this is it's definitely not a mall. We've basically taken the entire kind of southern half of the block that was previously undeveloped, and we're stacking three levels up and two levels down. And it's all told it'll be about 300,000 square feet. Really, it's oriented so you have some of the retail faces out and faces Franklin and Wacker and Jackson, and then you have some of the retail faces inward and really benefits from the natural light that you alluded to with the skylight. So very large gesture. It's kind of it'll be a one-of-a-kind skylight found, you know, nowhere else in the city. It'll be roughly 80 feet by 80 feet wide, so really large. A lot of light will come inside. And, you know, that was something we wanted to do to really create this unique space. And the whole vision with the project is to bring the street in and to create this urban destination that's a neighborhood in itself. You know, we have 15,000 people that work in the building every single day. That number's increasing as we continue to lease the building up. And then we have all the visitors and that come for the Skydeck, and then all the locals that work in the area as well. So it was important for us to really kind of be true to the building and you know, make sure that we create something that was special and was appropriate for sitting next to such an iconic structure.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget how many people work at Willis Tower, 15,000 and growing. I know, just having had worked across the street from Sears Tower for a year or so, there aren't many options there right now for people to go and do things like eat and shop and just hang out. That's going to be kind of cool to also draw on the neighborhood.
Absolutely, and we're focused on that, and there's such an opportunity. I mean, if you know, I work in the building today. You know, a lot of my colleagues do as well, and it's, yeah, the options are limited, right? And so we're in a little bit of a transitionary period, but it's really the whole neighborhood, you know, starting with us, just in that area is really being revitalized, and this is going to be a great boon if you work in the area for what your options are for, you know, throughout the day.
Yeah. So with the timeline that you set here, what are going to be the challenges going forward? What should people expect?
So, you know, the challenges, I think, are like any other construction project. It's just working with a very tight labor market and trying to, you know, work within the confines of a, you know, a building that was delivered in 1973. So, we're working through those. Those are nothing that we haven't been able to overcome. It's just kind of the normal course of action. But, you know, in the coming months here, you'll start to see glass going up on the outside of the building. You'll start to see the structure becoming closed. And then from the inside, it'll really start to take life.
The renderings show a little bit of park space, too, on the roof of this structure. Is that going to be for tenants of the building, or will that be open for everybody?
So it's a good catch. So, yeah, it's over 30,000 square feet of park that we're going to be making available to the public. So if you're a worker in the area and you want to grab your lunch and you come to our space, the catalog, grab your lunch and you can walk up on the roof and sit outside in a park, you know, situated in the middle of the loop, which is a unique opportunity.
Yeah, nice. David, thank you for being with us this morning. This is very cool. All the best to you and everybody getting this up and running. We can't wait.
Steve, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
David Moore, Senior Vice President, Portfolio Director at EQ Office, overseeing the Willis Tower project called Catalog. And you can head over to the Willis Tower website and look at some of the renderings of this found at willistower.com. It's 5:30. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Amazon opened its first Chicago cashierless Amazon Go store on Monday in the Loop. The store allows shoppers to scan their phones using the Amazon Go app at a turnstile when they enter, grab their food, and leave without swiping a credit card or handling cash. And rideshare drivers for Uber and Lyft rallied at O'Hare Airport Monday in protest of better pay and improved working conditions. The group is protesting abuses they say they faced from riders, as well as low wages. That's today's InnoMinute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition. Lots of trends happening these days in small business lending. Here today to talk a little bit about it, Tim Roach, CEO of Lender, back with us. Tim, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Before we go any further, I always like to kind of refresh the audience. Tell us about Lender and what you do.
Yeah, Lender is a specialty finance company. We're based in Chicago. We lend to small businesses throughout the country, the lower 48, and basically just trying to create a lending platform, specialty finance for the business owners and creating a better way for them to get capital.
Is there a seasonality to what you do? I mean, here we are going into the fall season. Is there something different that happens with lending in the fall than another time of the year?
I think there is. I think seasonality is you want to be able to pay what you can afford, ideally, right? And so some businesses are going to be very, very busy coming into the fall season and the holiday season, and others may not. If you're a landscaping company that has a ton of accounts that you're obviously doing the landscaping and your brick and everything else you're doing, but you don't have the snow removal, if you will, we know that payment schedule is going to look a lot different. So we try to make sure we're creating a financing option for every single client, especially if they have seasonality.
So let's talk about that a little bit more. Like what if for a landscaper, what would be the financing option there? How would you arrange that?
I'll give you another scenario. We have a company that does spring and winter apparel. And we just approved them for a $325,000 financing option. And they needed the $325,000 to provide that to their supplier so they could buy enough inventory coming into fall. However, they couldn't afford that all at one point. So we gave them $175,000. At the end of 60 days, buying another additional more inventory, we gave them another $100,000 after that, or we'll be giving them another $100,000. And we also gave them our lender business card, our lender debit card, and we put a $50,000 line of credit on that. So essentially, they have $325,000 over the next 90 to 120 days to be able to help them as they grow, their inventory increases, their sales increase. That allows them to pay us back during their busy time, and it doesn't restrict their cash flow when they're not busy.
So this is not a cookie-cutter kind of situation. You deal with individual clients and do what's best for each client.
Yeah, we try to look at what each business owner needs and really try to be able to think outside the box. Not everyone's going to fit into what you just said, a cookie cutter. What's good for one customer client is not going to be always good for the other. So we really try to identify what's best for that client and give them an option that's best for them and not just putting them inside of a box.
You mentioned there the debit card, this new debit card that I think since the last time we talked, it's become public now and it's out there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we launched it September 1st, kind of finally officially. We sent it out to a lot of our clients. The first 250 went out. We're going to start sending blocks of 250 to 500. We've gotten a great response back from it. It just allows our clients instant access to capital. We could push funds to it instantly, meaning we don't have to ACH or wire money the next day. It can be on your account as little as seconds, minutes. And so it's nice that if they need additional money, additional capital for inventory, for whatever it may be, something's going on, it has the opportunity. And then we create also a reporting for them at the end of every month. They see how they're starting to spend. We start doing a forward projecting instead of rear facing to make sure we're helping them when they actually need that capital because they are growing. You want to make sure you have the funds there. That's the hardest thing to do is you have a great product and you can't sell it because you don't have it. And so having the actual capital to be able to make sure you have what you need is really, really important. And that card is starting to create that ability for our clients to have that.
And it's not like a credit card because you're putting money on it.
Correct.
It's there right away.
It's a lender business card. So essentially, if we approved you for $50,000, you would have $50,000 of buying power on that card. And if you came back and said, Tim, we need another $25,000 or $50,000 because we have the World Cup and our restaurant is absolutely busy right now and things are going great and we need more inventory, more food and beer and wine. Great. And we can just deploy instant money back onto that card. So now you have that $50,000 looks like a $100,000 line of credit.
As business owners know, you sometimes can't go back to the office and get a check. You can't wait for the treasurer to cut you one of those checks. This is a good way to have that right away in handy.
It's a great way to do it, and we love, you know, we want a lender, a business card in every one of our clients' wallets, so when they do need it, it's there. They can reach out to us, and you know, if they need that help, that's the idea of the lender card. It's just another way of creating a better financing option for our clients.
Let's talk about something that that I heard you talking about earlier. Failing fast, recovering faster. This idea that there's something to that. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, I just recently was on an MSNBC show, and I was talking about failing fast and recovering faster. And the bottom line behind it is being able to, you know, we all as business owners have to make decisions every day. And the more decisive we make them, I think the better off we are. But that doesn't mean just our successful decisions. That also means our failures. And I think it's sometimes really difficult to accept that change or accept that failure, because we've really put a lot of time and effort, and we just have this amazing marketing campaign, but guess what? It doesn't work. Yeah. And so all of a sudden, you know, 6 months later, you're wondering why your leads or your clients aren't coming back to us, because we didn't realize that it was failing. So we didn't analyze, recognize, and react to it in real time, and then have actually a recovery plan in place. So whatever your measurables are, your KPIs, your matrix that works for your company, identifying that you're failing, it's okay. Cut your losses. Be decisive in that process. What happens is you start getting a lot more efficient in how you fail. You start becoming more proactive versus reactive in the entire process. And the whole culture around you starts to accept failure and say, this is okay, because you know what? We can recover from it faster. We can put a better decisive plan in place, and we can learn from it. And so as a business owner, as we just recently moved our company from our headquarters from New York to Chicago, we rebranded our company. We moved from a true finance company to a sales and technology company. We had failures along the way. And some of them took us a little longer than I would have liked, and we really learned a great deal. And the culture around us now is starting to see that it's okay to fail, it's okay to you know, cut your losses, it's okay to realize that you've done something wrong, but you have to be able to recover from it. And so putting that plan in place and actually recovering is really, really important. And then you start to see the fun of the business, the impact, the reward. And guess what? Every business owner wants to be successful, and that's a way of getting there.
What stands in the way of accomplishing that? Is it, in a lot of cases, is it just pride that you don't want to admit failure?
Yes. Yeah. I think change and failure. I don't. You know, I said this the other day. I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and say, I cannot wait to fail today. And I think that's our pride, our instinct that we resist change. You know what? I'm busting my tail. I really put a lot of effort and passion into this. I don't want it to fail. But sometimes we're going to fail. Sometimes it's okay to recognize that. And that's the hardest thing, including for me, is, you know, I know I'm right. Well, why are you right? Ask yourself why this is successful and get back to basics.
And part of moving forward is to come up with the right plan, to do the right kind of marketing. You are doing that with the Blackhawks. You just cut a new commercial.
We did. We just launched our first commercial with the Blackhawks, which we're really excited about.
Right.
But we just cut our first commercial, and basically it's really trying to do right by our client. You know, that's the way we do business, and it's really important. And that's the message that we're trying to basically on these commercials is lender is committed to funding small businesses. And so that's really important for us to get the message across that, you know, doing right by you, doing right by our client is the only way we do business. And I think that message is internal. Our culture believes that. We call all of our, you know, people refer to business owners as merchants. You're a business owner, right? We call them clients. And that's that little change for us culturally makes a big difference. And so I think what we're trying to do is every client that comes in our door, we're trying to create a finance solution for them that is best for them. And in doing it in real time, our technology continues to get better. We're under about an hour and 10 minutes for a full underwriting file. So, you know, getting this done in real time is really exciting for us. And it's and to your point, and it's doing right by our clients.
The commercial is going to talk about 0% financing for 90 days. You really can't say no to that either, can you?
No, that's we're a little nervous about that. 0% financing for the first 90 days for qualified borrowers. That's a really exciting option. As we all know, 0% financing, but for a loan product, for an advanced product, for a lending product, it's kind of unique. But we want to really reach out to our clients and have them identify how important it is for us to be able to connect with them. And we thought the best way to do that was offering 0% financing for the first 90 days.
On your website, you have a really good blog, by the way. Small business owners need to go check out some of the tips there. I found a couple. One of them was about equipment financing options, giving different ideas for that. Why is it important to have a plan in place and options when you talk about doing financing for equipment?
So the equipment financing, that's another vertical that we're starting to move into, to your point. Equipment financing, ABL, traditional factoring for staffing or purchase order. Equipment financing is just another option that you're growing your business. You're in construction. You're in restaurant. We just did a gentleman does, he makes all of the guts, if you will, for large ovens, and he has to be north of 6,000 or 7,000 degrees. And we had to do an equipment financing for there. He actually needed $1 million, but he needed them in $250,000 tranches. Hmm. And so we said, well, let's base it off of what your inventory is, how much equipment, new equipment you'll be buying, and also his business building. And we looked at a different way of actually financing, because you couldn't go back to the bank, and no one else wanted to give him $1 million. And we said, let's structure it the right way. And he had equipment. He had an asset with his building. And so we found a way to finance him. He got a great rate. He's on his second. We just gave another $250,000. So he has $500,000. And business is up about 65% for him. So, you know, to your point earlier, we want to be able to be in several verticals to help several clients. And if it's from asset-based lending, if it's from equipment leasing, if it's traditional factoring, if it's from business financial solutions, merchant cash advance, whatever it may be, we want to be able to make sure our client can come to us and we can actually solve that problem for them.
Are you already working on the next big thing? I know you've kind of unveiled a couple of new things here today, but I bet you have something in the back of your head, right? Next?
The next thing for us is really starting to be more of a forward-facing underwriting model that ties into our sales and technology to really help our clients basically project out the next 6 and 12 months. And we're looking at being able to layer technology with their GL, their general ledger, and actually scrub that through full automation, give them their answer, and show them essentially what their line of credit would be every single month. And we're in the early stages of that, but it's a really a cool idea, because it starts to allow the business owner to forecast out as well with us. And we both learn at the same time. We learn in real time. And we can really start helping our clients understand, you know, their balance sheet, their income statement, truly cash flow, and start solving for a lot of problems that way.
How much of that is artificial intelligence that does those tasks?
A lot. Yeah. A lot is going the way of AI now. And we're pretty excited that we've partnered with a company recently that adds, you know, probably 30 or 40 different algorithms at any one time that will get us, goes through our data set, gets what we need. AI is extremely important. Making sure you're using it the right way. You know, everyone talks about AI, but if you don't deploy it the right way and you don't get the results you want, it's not great. And so we've had our failures in AI, and learning very quickly how to adjust it so we make sure we're getting the results and we're getting the correct numbers back from us, so we're able to actually help our clients.
On the ledger thing again, are business owners, small business owners, some of them kind of leery of the new technology and the AI, or are they jumping on board?
I think it's mixed. Okay. I think it's how you explain it. We haven't launched it yet. It's still, you know, we're still talking to some clients, kind of as a beta, if you will. Ultimately, I think they'll be excited about it, but everybody's very, very concerned about the privacy, right? I have to make sure that everything's secured. We take that very seriously. So making sure the client understands what we're doing, why we're doing it, how they're protected, how we are protecting them, their security. I think once they get through that, I think everyone will be very excited by it, because it allows them a little bit more freedom, and they start seeing another way in how we're looking at their GL and helping them understand the best way to get financing. And sometimes the best way is, honestly, is also not with us. We refer a lot of our clients to other lenders, even some banking relationships that we have. We feel that that's a better situation for them. So we're willing to do that as well, which is important to us. Once again, it's doing right by our clients.
Tim, sounds like everything's going great. Thanks for stopping by this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Roach is the CEO of Lender. You can find more about them online at lender.online.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 52 points. NASDAQ futures are up about a quarter as well. S&P futures higher too. So it looks like a positive open a little bit later on as the opening bell rings. 8:30 Chicago time. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. So much to talk about this morning in so little time. We quickly begin with the weekly crop bulletins that showed 54% of the corn crop mature and 9% of the nation's corn crop harvested. North Carolina and Texas leading in harvesting at 66%, Illinois with 12%. Soybeans, the harvested crop, totaled 6% at this point. Illinois with 4% of the bean crop harvested. Indiana and Iowa with 2% of the crop harvested. Now, let's go to North Carolina. Food companies kept slaughter plants closed yesterday, swamped by Hurricane Florence as the flash floods collapsed the walls of at least two hog manure pits, made roads undrivable, and delayed rail shipments. North Carolina, top producer of poultry, number two state in hog production, and a big producer of tobacco. The situation is that they can't get feed deliveries into the hatcheries and into the hog farms, and they can't get product moving out. And it's going to take a while because they still say some of the worst flooding is still to come. More than 3,000 hog lagoons in the state were unaffected. But there were some that were deeply infected. Two waste pits suffered structural damage. Four were inundated with water. Seven had discharges. So it's going to take a while to recover in that part of the hurricane area. Hope you have a better day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Just a couple more stories before we leave you this morning. Visa and MasterCard shares are trading lower in the pre-market this morning after the credit card companies say they and other defendants will pay an extra $900 million to retailers in a settlement that would ultimately cost the industry about $6.2 billion and draw a line under one of the most expensive antitrust lawsuits in the U.S. Visa says its share of the extra $900 million payout, which amounts to about $7.25 billion, first agreed to in 2012, would be about $600 million. MasterCard's additional payment would be about $108 million in this settlement. Also this morning, we're watching a couple of stories, one of them involving oil. The head of OPEC says the oil cartel must stick together for the good of the global economy as Iran faces renewed U.S. sanctions. The OPEC Secretary General says that Iran is not only a founding member of OPEC, it's a very important member of the organization. He says they have no choice but to continue to work with all parties, even with the renewed sanctions brought by the United States. He has not addressed how the global oil industry can replace Iranian crude supplies in an already tight market. Benchmark Brent crude already nearing $80 a barrel, and some believe it might go even further higher. A judge in Chicago has ruled that the towing company Lincoln Towing can continue to operate its appeal while its decision to be closed is appealed. The Illinois Commerce Commission voted unanimously last week to revoke Lincoln Towing's service license immediately, citing hundreds of alleged violations. But a judge said that the company can resume towing while it challenges the decision by state regulators. The company had to put up a $100,000 bond and must file daily towing logs with the Illinois Attorney General's office. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Tuesday, September the 18th. Not a lot on the calendar today. The Red Book is out today. We'll get a look at how retail sales are going. Housing market index is due, and Treasury International Capital report is out today. Some of the other things that could move the markets, let's see, we've got earnings from General Mills and AutoZone today. U.S. Treasury foreign bond ownership stats are out. Then tomorrow we have earnings from Darden, Micron Technology. Friday, the new iPhone and Apple Watch will hit stores for purchase. So plenty to move the markets as we move through the week.